It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Our former colleague Anna Sale talks with us about her new podcast called Death, Sex, and Money.
I think when you talk about death, sex, and money, it takes admitting that you don't have all the answers and there's some things that make you uncomfortable. And that's really scary when you're talking about relationships. That's really scary when you're talking about money.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. About a third of Kanawha County residents surveyed say a member of their household experienced an illness they believe was connected to the January 9th chemical spill in Charleston. That's according to data collected by the Kanawha Charleston Health Department in partnership with the University of Charleston. Ashton Mara explains how that survey was conducted and previews the results that will officially be released next week.
The phone survey was conducted over a period of 5 days in early April. The county health department started with a database of about 6,000 cell and landlines, and then surveyors trained on how to conduct the 72-question survey began making calls. Dr. Raul Gupta, chief health officer of the Kanawha Charleston Health Department, says they didn't call all 6,000 people. The number they did call, they're still trying to determine. But he says he does know around 500 residents chose to complete the survey, and those are the results they'll be presenting on Monday.
What these studies are meant to do is find correlations, find what is the pattern of particular elements we're looking at in our community, and then form the foundation for other researchers to come and build on that body of evidence.
The survey also asked respondents to give local, state, and federal agencies, as well as West Virginia American Water, an A through F grade for their trustworthiness in the days following the spill. The water company fared the worst, with almost 40% of respondents giving them an F grading. Gupta says overall, the survey is meant to gauge things like the psychological distress caused to residents, whether someone suffering from an illness possibly related to the spill, sought medical attention, and why, as well as other areas he says haven't been looked at by previous studies. In fact, Dr. David Lateef, professor and chair of the Department of Pharmaceutical and Administrative Services at the University of Charleston, says he believes this survey is the first of its kind.
This is a new type study. We believe it has not been done before, and it is trying to tap into the perceptions of the residents of Kanawha County on how they feel they were affected from a communication standpoint, from an economic impact, and from a psychosocial standpoint.
Lateef also stresses the survey is scientific. Their methods have been proven by a review board at the University of Charleston and passed rigorous standards. Gupta says the survey only includes residents of Kanawha County because they were not eligible for outside grant assistance to expand. The University of Charleston provided some funding for the program as well as local physicians and epidemiologists. Final results from a full data analysis will be presented Monday evening at the University of Charleston. Specialists from the Harvard School of Public Health will also present their findings from a separate survey conducted after the spill. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
For more information about Monday evening's presentation, visit our website, wvpublic.org. In the first of two Senate confirmation hearings, West Virginia native Sylvia Matthews Burwell answered questions yesterday about how she'd handle the job if she becomes Secretary of Health and Human Services. Cecilia Mason has more.
Sylvia Matthews Burwell was introduced to the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions by Arizona Republican John McCain and West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin. In his comments, McCain pointed to Burwell's success at running the Walmart Foundation, saying he believes Burwell has the qualifications to run HHS and will be more responsive to Congress than current Secretary Kathleen Sebelius has been. McCain told the committee he advised Burwell, who currently manages the Office of Management and Budget, to turn down the nomination.
After all, who would recommend their friend take over as captain of the Titanic after it hit the iceberg? Obviously, she ignored my advice and accepted the nomination anyway, continuing her pattern of public service.
In recommending Burwell, McCain pointed out if she gets the job, Burwell will oversee an agency that has a $1 trillion budget and 80,000 employees. Manchin told the committee he wasn't there to change anyone's mind about the Affordable Care Act, but rather to get the most talented person for the job.
We can get that train moving in the right direction. Who can sit down and listen to each one of us. We all have concerns. We all want to see it better. We want our fellow Americans to have good quality health care and access to it. We want to make sure that it's workable and it's affordable. And we don't have a person that understands numbers better than Sylvia, a person that has more experience than Sylvia, and more compassion.
The ranking Republican on the committee, Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander, focused most of his comments and questions on the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. He talked about Republican proposals to move the health care system in a direction that emphasizes choice, freedom, and lower costs. He pointed to new regulations requiring certain procedures be covered by insurance, which made most bare-bone policies no longer legal and forces customers to buy new, upgraded policies. Alexander wondered if Matthews would be willing to extend the deadline for purchasing the upgraded policies.
Senator, when I think about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, there are three fundamental anchors that I think about. One is the issue of accessibility. The other is the issue of affordability. And the final is the issue of...
Now, Ms. Burwell, I only have 5 minutes. And so what about an answer to the question? Would you extend the 3 years that you now allow... states to have to help people keep the plans that they want to keep?
Why I was mentioning the three goals is because I think any actions that are taken, one should view in the context of implementing against those core goals. Right now, the changes that have been put in place are changes that are a part of a transition period as people are transitioning to a point where we can implement a system, and it's a system where pre-existing conditions are covered, where women and gender issues can't be discriminated.
Well, now, is that a no or a yes? Or you just aren't prepared,
Senator,
to say at this point?
Senator, at this point, I think we want to see what is happening with regard to the issues of implementation.
South Carolina Republican Tim Scott told Burwell he basically wanted to talk about three topics: what he called the fuzzy mass surrounding Obamacare, the promises made and promises not kept, and whether she would be the ambassador for the health care law or Secretary of Health and Human Services.
It would be helpful for the American people to have a clear picture of what is in fact happening with Obamacare, since we now are relegated to getting our accurate information from the New York Times and the Washington Post and not from HHS.
Senator, you have my commitment that if I am confirmed, the two pieces of principles that will guide me with regard to information are transparency and accuracy.
Burwell received an outright endorsement from one Republican, North Carolina Senator Richard Burr, who says he will vote to confirm her.
I support her nomination. I will vote for her in the Finance Committee. And it's for one primary reason. It's because she doesn't come with a single experience that would make her a good secretary. She comes with a portfolio of experience that would make her a tremendous asset at addressing some of the challenges that that agency specifically and uniquely has.
Not all the questions and comments directed at Burwell were about the Affordable Care Act. Senators from all parties engaged her in discussion about other HHS responsibilities like early childhood education programs, National Institutes of Health Research, regulating the amount of salt in the food supply, federal regulation of e-cigarettes, and maintaining support for community health centers. Maryland Democrat Barbara Mikulski discussed the fact that quite a few HHS facilities are located in her state.
I also have some of the highest rates of Nobel Prize winners and some of the highest rates of poverty, whether they're in Baltimore City or mountain counties adjacent to West Virginia. So I need a chief executive officer. We need someone who will bring executive skills to this job.
The committee that had this hearing will not vote on the nomination. The next step is a confirmation hearing before the Senate Finance Committee, which will take a vote. The full Senate will ultimately weigh in on the nomination. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
Death, sex, money. With little question, those are issues everyone deals with at some point in their lives. But few of us talk about it publicly. Former West Virginia Public Broadcasting reporter Anna Sale now works for public radio station WNYC in New York and is tackling those issues head on with a new podcast, attempting to give those subjects their due diligence in the public sphere. Dave Mistich spoke with Sale about the program and why bringing those issues to the forefront of the American discourse is important.
I guess we ought to start off with the title and the concept of the show, Death, Sex, and Money.
What I was trying to get at is just that this is an interview show where we're not going to be talking to people on book tours necessarily or hearing interviews that you're hearing everywhere else, but really trying to have conversations about things that we think about a lot but don't talk about enough. And that's the slogan of the show. It's let's talk more about these things that cause us worry, that are really about the kind of most important things in our life, you know, work and money, family, relationships, and death, which is really about, you know, making our lives count and having purpose to what we're doing here. So that was the structure. And of course, death, sex, and money, it catches your attention, but it's really an invitation to come in and have some kind of deeper conversation.
Do you think it's possible that these aspects of people's lives are so common that they don't think to have a conversation about them?
Exactly. I think you're right on there. I think something else is talking about death, sex, and money is not news. It's not news to say sometimes long-term relationships are hard, or sometimes it's embarrassing when you realize you aren't earning enough money. Like, that's not a news story. And as a result, when we hear those stories, it's often, you know, in the first paragraph of a story about health insurance coverage, and then the rest of it is about policy, or, you know, the first paragraph about the story about, tax revenues in a state. It's you start with somebody saying, I'm not making as much as I used to make. My argument is those stories are worth their own time. It's worth pausing and listening to what that experience is.
I do want to speak a little bit about what you've made available of the program itself. And you tell a story about your own love life by speaking with former U.S. Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming and how he and his wife helped save your own relationship. Set it up for us, and then we'll go to a clip.
Sure. So I was broken up with my boyfriend, Arthur, and we were struggling with long distance. I had some questions about whether it really was going to work long term. And being in my 30s, I just felt like I couldn't waste time on something that didn't have a future. So we were split up, and Arthur asked Senator Alan Simpson for help. He wrote him a letter and asked Alan Simpson to give me a call to ask me to come out to Wyoming for this event that was happening.
And here's a bit from that episode of Death, Sex, and Money.
Okay, what did you, when you first read that,
thought it was the oddity of the ages. And I looked at it, put it away, and then Ann and I were in Denver, and I said, I got to do something with this thing. I think I'll just toss it. And Ann looked at it, and she said, worth a try.
This is just the sweetest letter. And I thought, that would be a shame not to call.
With esteem and humility, he ends.
He seemed very desperate.
So, what happened next?
And so, out of this kind of crazy plea from Arthur, this letter to Alan Simpson, whom he didn't know, this relationship blossomed between the four of us, where they opened up about just how, about their relationship and their marriage and how they'd gotten through difficult times. And it ended up being a really, not only a wonderful interview to hear, but for me, transformative, because it really did help me kind of relax and think about commitment as something you decide to do together, and that you don't have to have all the details figured out, but you decide to form a partnership, and that's how it works.
Why is it so embarrassing for people to have conversations about relationships and sex and death and money and all these other big issues of our time when everyone is dealing with the exact same thing?
I think when you talk about death, sex, and money, it takes admitting that you don't have all the answers, and there's some things that make you uncomfortable. And that's really scary when you're talking about relationships. That's really scary when you're talking about money. And it's, you know, when you're talking about mortality, you know, the existential, you know, underpinnings of why we're here, that's big stuff. And it's, so I think that, that it has to be a safe space to want to talk about that kind of thing. And that's what I've really tried to do with this podcast, is to say, here's a podcast. It's going to sound like a radio show, but we're going to like go right at some of these issues. We're going to go at some hard things. And, but after you listen, you're going to feel less alone. You're going to know that other people are grappling with these questions. And that is really healing.
Great, Anna. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
To hear an extended interview with former West Virginia Public Broadcasting reporter Anna Sale about her new podcast, Death, Sex, and Money, visit our website, wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:45. Partly sunny skies today with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s, lows tonight in the 50s and 60s. Mostly cloudy on Saturday, with a continued chance of rain and thunderstorms, temperatures in the 60s and 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
Solas performs Am I Born to Die on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week. Solace with Am I Born to Die. You can hear this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Board, Dave Mistich, and Ashton Mara. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.